Welcome to the Watch OK Please podcast, a podcast where three friends try to convince each other to devote what little time they have left to watch more TV and or movies than they've ever wanted to watch. Please join us while we argue about our media cues and waste everyone's valuable time on things that just don't matter.
Hey Watchers, it's Scott, and thank you for joining us on another episode of the Watch OK Please podcast. First up, Dan and I give Nayan our feedback on the documentary Cricket Fever, Mumbai Indians, available on Netflix. Just a heads up, there might be a few audio blips, but I think you can still catch the fever. Cricket fever, that is. Next, Scott shocks the world in pitching a movie. It is One Night in Miami, which is viewable on Amazon Prime. As always, if you are enjoying or hating any of this podcast, please rate and review us on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. You can also hit us up on our Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook page, as we do monitor those pages. Who knows, you may even get a shout out in a future ep. Finally, feel free to leave us a voicemail with a pitch of a show or movie that you'd like us to watch on our Anchor page at anchor.fm/watchokplease. All right, Watchers, on with the inanity.
All right, guys, it's Nayan, and we're back to get Dan and Scott's feedback on the show Cricket Fever, Mumbai Indians, available on Netflix. There's a full first season out there, but I had these guys watch at least episodes 1 to 3. So, guys, what'd you think?
So I didn't realize how young these guys are.
Yeah, they recruit these guys really young. I mean, it's younger than most players in the U.S. because most of the players in the U.S. are going through college first. But yeah, they get these guys super young.
Seemed to me like the owner was really young.
Ambani? I'm not sure how young he was per se. I'd have to look that up, but definitely feels on the younger side, certainly.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's just, I think when, at least when I generally think of people who own sports teams, you know, they're way, way older, you know, obviously because they needed to have accumulated millions, if not billions of dollars to own their team. So usually they don't get to that position until they're older. But obviously it seemed like he had the family connection. But still, to put so much pressure and so much responsibility on him, like for the entire team, basically, that seemed like it would be quite a lot to handle.
Agreed. Yeah. I mean, well, that's certainly something he was signing up for willingly. And ultimately, I guess you guys probably aren't as familiar with the Ambanis generally or the Reliance conglomerate itself, right? Because it doesn't get as much play outside of India other than...
Yeah, only tangentially from what I've heard from the people.
I think the closest thing that you guys might have run into is the Big Cinema Galaxy movie chain. They have one in Atlanta, Scott, and they've got them. They definitely have them through New Jersey. I don't know if you guys have seen that particular chain.
I know of them. I haven't been to one.
What's it called?
Big Cinemas Galaxy. I don't even know if they should be still operating, probably.
Not familiar with it.
There was a location in Atlanta. I'm not sure if it's still operational, but it's basically just a very it's focused on Indian cinema. So Reliance is a massive giant in India itself. They're in a bunch of different industries. So it's kind of like I'm trying to think of a good equivalent. I guess maybe sadly Coke Industries might be a good equivalent.
Well, I think you can think about Zaibatsu's, you know, in Japan is kind of a very interesting similar kind of concept where there's numerous verticals that one company is all part of. Although it sounds like to me that, correct me if I'm wrong, but their verticals are distinctly more dissimilar than say, oh, we're in consumer electronics, commercial electronics, semiconductors, etc.
Yeah, it definitely branches out further than that. But yeah, these guys have just tons and tons and tons of money. It's kind of ridiculous.
Yeah, so I mean, you could just tell that by looking at their house. Wow.
Or their house looks ridiculous.
Yeah.
In terms of like the random verticals, like they have Reliance Media Works is a post-production company that does like post-production work for films that has won Oscars. And they might have a mining operation, if I remember correctly. And they might, I think, also run, they own a wireless company. It's ridiculous. They're very, quite ubiquitous throughout India.
Well, I mean, I think that that's one of the things is that what on a portfolio perspective for investments helps a lot, especially through times of crisis, diversification.
Certainly. That's why, probably why they stuck around so long.
There you go.
I think they're big into steel as well, if I remember correctly. I could be wrong about that, but I thought that might have been where they started.
Oh, thank you for listening to the Watch Business Okay Please podcast.
Yeah, right? the Watch CNBC production, yeah. But seriously, anyone who could basically stage the Amazing Race inside their house, it seemed like that's... were going around the world when they were doing that scavenger hunt. So, you know, you got to be doing pretty well.
Definitely. Legit. I mean, I kind of like the way the documentary brought everyone into the fold here, because obviously we don't know the Reliance, we didn't know the Ambani's history per se, so they did drop a little bit of that knowledge early on, so we were able to kind of get a little bit of a framework of the players here, the players, you know, figurative and literal, if you will, and I think that was very helpful.
How did you guys feel about the actual cricket matches themselves when they got into it? Then
now let's get into that. Yeah. Yeah, I think. I think for me, you know, again, I only knew tangentially little pieces of cricket because I've never even watched even part of a match, let alone a full one. If I was able to sit that long without having to go to the bathroom, But I thought it was really, you know, they really captured a lot of the excitement, and I think that the IPL in India has a lot of similarities to other very big time leagues of different sports that are out there. So it doesn't matter if it's, you know, Australian rules football or if it's soccer or if it's cricket here, it's especially definitely a kind of a pride of your team that even goes beyond some of the pride that even Americans have for some of their teams. At least what I can see, because again, they drop everything, you know, going to the game is kind of religious passage, you know, religious, you know, voyage to that stadium. It's not the same for a lot of people out there. So for people that are supporting, you know, the team of the moment, that's fine. But then, you know, some people that, you know, will say, well, I'm a Browns fan for life. And like, I'm like, well, okay, that's good on you. But, you know, it's not the same for everyone out there for sure.
Yeah, it seems like the impression I get, it's like on a whole nother level in terms of the devotion that folks have to teams in the IPL. It's crazy. I actually just found out they just added two teams, one for Lucknow and then one for Gujarat. So I split my allegiances between the Gujarat Titans and Mumbai Indians going forward. But that's for the upcoming 2022 season.
What's the Lucknow team named?
Super Giants, I think.
Super Giants. Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, very cool names of the teams, I have to say.
Yes.
Yeah, definitely.
I did like that. Yeah, the cricket scenes were great, and cameramen must have been pretty close to the field, or at least had very good cameras, because it really did seem like you were on the same level as the field, kind of watching this from up close.
Yeah.
Yeah, agreed. Did you guys feel like you missed out, or it was hard to understand what was going on without the knowledge of cricket?
I feel like I caught on. You know, the concept of batting is obviously, because we have baseball behind ourselves, that kind of aspect is somewhat easy to understand. And we might not know the nuances of certain terminology, of course, but, you know, eventually bowlers to a pitcher and a batter to a batter, that much was easy to understand. And obviously you have people that are out in the field fielding fly balls, so there's a certain amount of similarity that does exist across the way, as we discussed during the pitch, how Americans adopted a kind of what we were unintentionally calling the lazy form of cricket, and a lazy puritanical cricket, because remember, we have to stay inside the foul lines. Yeah, so I think that if you have an understanding of at least baseball, you can at least, I think, have a passing understanding of where to go from there. I think seeing the different setups and the polls and everything, that you might not understand that over time and immediately right away, but over time you might be able to kind of gain an understanding, or if you watch a video on the side, it helps a lot as well.
So Dan, you're saying that we really did talk about pitching during the pitch of the show?
Yeah.
I think you're right.
I couldn't agree more.
Yeah, I think there were certainly parts of it that were confusing or that I didn't quite fully understand, but I agree with Dan that I was able at least to follow along enough so that I knew when Mumbai Indians were winning or not winning. And I think the documentary did a good job of making that accessible for people who weren't cricket fans, with both the, I think some of the written information that they showed on the screen from time to time, and the different sound bites that they had from the players and the coaches, that you were able to follow along and really see that, at least to me, it seemed like things just kept getting worse and worse and worse, you know, as they lose the first three matches. And that everyone was really kind of happy in the beginning of the season because they had just come off of winning the title and they're all like really excited about the new season. And then they kept getting more and more despondent after they kept losing for a while. So I was certainly able to follow it along in that way.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And again, I think that, you know, everyone, when they follow the course of a season, I think everyone goes through win streaks or lose streaks. And so, you know, it this kind of thing happens in games. I think that a lot of people don't necessarily understand the mental game that occurs in between games. And I think that until you've been in a league of some sort, dodgeball or whatever the case it is, you might not have an understanding of how a loss might affect your performance in the next game or your lack of confidence in the next game. Absolutely.
Fair enough. So did the actual background and the interplay and the personalities make it interesting enough of a documentary to watch?
Oh,
or
yeah.
Were you guys kind of bored?
Oh, no, I really enjoyed it. The fact that there were two brothers on the team, that was very unique to me. Just because I don't think we really see that typically very often. I mean, we see, say, you know, Venus and Serena in tennis, for example, and you might see similar things like that happen, but you don't necessarily, maybe on a luge team possibly, I don't know, but you don't see that, I would say, on the ball field that often in that regard. So I think that was really a unique kind of idea. And the fact that also that we had to see the draft ahead of time. And that was very interesting too, because again, you know, unless you are in, you know, fantasy football, you might not be following drafts and thinking of that. But again, this is, it's a major part of the business. You have to balance your budget and your operations or whatnot with, you know, what you're bringing in and who you're bringing in and how that's going to balance or unbalance your team and make them easier or harder to manage in that regard. So yeah, I definitely appreciated all of that dynamic. And I also liked how they had some, you know, a super young guy on the team, and yet some, you know, more mature people. And I think it was interesting to see how they both cope with the stresses of the games themselves and in between games. And obviously, we looked at an injury with Hardik, and I think that was really great to see, because you know, you want to, when you're on the field, basically you want to give it your all, and your body not being willing to keep up with you. That is a huge, huge thing. And this probably happens a lot more, obviously, with even mature players out there, where you, if they're in their, you know, mid-30s, they might not be able to move like they once did when they were 28. So it's a big thing. Every aspect of what they do is tough. I mean, fielding is always tough, especially like Nyan, when you mentioned in the pitch, bare hands. You know,
yeah.
That's like that's all this seems crazy to me in a lot of ways.
I enjoyed it as well. And Nyan, I think you were right, based on what you mentioned in the pitch, that this was definitely in my wheelhouse in terms of off the beaten path sports, at least in terms of the U.S. So I am all about learning about different sports, and even ones that are not so common were in my experience growing up. And there were a lot of different, you know, characters, so to speak, in the documentary, but I think they did a good job trying to make it so that you could keep track of everyone, and that they went into the backstories of some of the players, which was nice, and the coaches. So I didn't feel too overwhelming in terms of like, wait a minute, who are they talking about now? And I think they had a lot of very interesting stories. And so I think they did a pretty good job in making it so that you could follow multiple different storylines from episode to episode.
And I also like how they brought the fans into it too, especially when Rohit took him to the old pitch over there where he used to play as a kid, and then how, you know, immediately he gets recognized and gets swarmed and pretty much almost can't leave. That happens a lot with a lot of celebrities and a lot of famous ball players for sure on our side, regardless if you're NBA, MLB, etc. But I think that kind of how their fans' devotion to the game is so different and so passionate I think that it, seeing someone who has, you know, worked themselves to a point where they, you know, they have a vehicle and they have access to other things, it's a huge, huge aspirational goal for people. So not only you might be having fun playing the game, but if you have an, if you play well enough, you have the opportunity to kind of lift yourself up from wherever you are in your walk of life. I mean, that is a huge, huge societal push. And especially, again, I can't speak to, you know, living in that kind of hierarchical structure in India, but I think that means a lot to a lot of people, I bet.
Oh yeah, I think so. That ability, or that just having even that chance of just being playing on the lower levels and really being able to make it up to the major leagues, because the IPL in terms of professional cricket outside of national teams is kind of the pinnacle, and you see that with all these players coming from all the major cricket playing countries, like the folks from the West Indies, New Zealand, Australia. I think you get more of a sense of that as the series goes on, but this being in sort of that upper echelon of leagues, it's pretty amazing. And just having that opportunity can be really inspiring to folks, or at least I feel like it does carry a lot of folks forward in terms of their passion for the game, and just that, you know, always that possibility of being able to jump up and really be recognized and maybe be in the IPL someday.
And Nyan, maybe you could help us understand this better, but it seemed like after the player auction, when they basically decided they were going to try to field primarily a younger team, that was taking a big risk, that they had a bunch of unproven guys. Did it seem like they were taking a risk in doing that? Is that not something that cricket teams typically do with going, basing the team around a lot of younger players?
Not in my experience. I'll admit my experience is a bit limited. They do tend to focus on a good solid base of marquee established players to guide them through and then develop talent. Kind of like, I guess you can make the equivalent of quarterbacks in the NFL, right? Like if you're the Packers, you're going to try and develop someone to work alongside Aaron Rodgers, as opposed to actually, you know, just throwing them in and saying, Hey Aaron, once you hit the bench. Though, let's be realistic. We all kind of want Aaron Rodgers to take some time off and stop being an idiot. But yeah, so I do think that was a bit of a unique approach into focus on as many younger players in my limited experience. Yeah.
And it seemed like maybe that contributed to their struggles in the beginning of the season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I definitely would get that again. But even it just shows you, though, that even more senior people on the team can go through struggles, regardless if it's a confidence thing, if it's an injury thing. So that's why I think it was, you know, it's great to have more energy, more spunk in everything. And the idea is that you can find a diamond in the rough. You know, they're looking for that next, you know, big star that's going to basically, you know, not get knocked out like Dhoni.
right.
And that was, you know, I think that's really what it comes down to. It's just, again, everything is a gamble for the most part. I mean, I can't tell you how many first or second round draft picks have, you know, that, and I'm not really into football, mind you, but I hear things, you know, or see things in the online with scores or recaps or whatnot. And it's like, wow, they paid that much for that person, or that one, he went in the first or second round, and look at his performance in these past like seven games. Like, really? it's kind of, but again, you know, when you think of it from the player's perspective, again, there are other factors that definitely play into this. And again, communication, as we learned, is very key as well.
Yes, for sure. And I think, Dan, you're right in that every team is trying to find that one or small number of young players that will turn out to be great. But it seemed like Mumbai Indians went with like almost entirely young players.
Right.
Before Except they knew their, who would really
like
work.
Three or four person core, something like that.
Yeah. Before they would really know which of them, of the several or mostly younger players, would turn out to be the ones that would be really good. That's what surprised me.
Mm. So did you guys go past the first three episodes, or?
I was about to start the fourth one before I got sick. Right after that recording. So I didn't have a chance to really get into that. But I am planning to finish off this season for sure.
I would consider definitely watching more of this. I did watch only the first three episodes, but it was I think it kind of got you into the groove by that point to say, yeah, like, I want to know what happens with this team, at least for what happens at the end of this season. You know, how did they recover? Did they start to play better? Were they able to defend their championship? So, yeah, I could definitely see myself watching more episodes.
Yeah, I agree that, you know, each episode, I think, is also like the timing of what goes at the end of each episode is great. It kind of worked a lot like a lot of other kind of saga type series, even though this is not like, you know, fantasy or science fiction, in that you do get a little cliffhangered, especially after episode two, for example. That was, yes. You know, that's about as cliffhangered as you can get.
I know, right?
That was quite a cliffhanger, yes.
Documentaries out there that, you know, can be very in depth and what some people may call long-winded, a la Ken Burns style. I mean, I love Ken Burns documentaries personally, but, you know, not everyone may appreciate them in that regard. But there are documentaries, I think, that really take the subject matter and put it into a real good perspective, and as Scott was saying earlier, an accessible perspective to a non-cricket watcher. And I think that's where the magic of this series would be. And if they were to do a second season on even one of the new teams that Nyan mentioned earlier, I think that would be pretty neat, because then we get a, you know, you get a real, and I think that what's good for the IPL and for any sponsors that sponsor the IPL as well, you know, they get immediately more eyes and, you know, and ears onto the game and onto the league. And I think that drives more passion, drives more people wanting to go to games or buy merchandise. It's a cycle. It just generates more GDP. And welcome back to the Watch Your Hey Business Please podcast again. But yeah.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And in terms of the broadcasting, at least in the US, which doesn't have as big of a cricket market, but there is a very dedicated cricket market in terms of folks, South Asian folks in the States, is that they're now showing these games not on just the niche cricket platforms like Willow, but on ESPN Plus as well. So if you're willing to get up stupid early, like I am every once in a while, and just watch cricket, it's available as part of your ESPN Plus package.
Yeah. That's really neat. I mean, it's funny because every once in a while you see other countries thinking about, oh, what's this American football about, or what's, you know, and obviously everyone in the world plays either basketball or hockey or this regard. So it's interesting how these more focused sports like you and Scott mentioned during the pitch as well, and again earlier, it's very interesting that we can all kind of get a little kind of picture into that and a little taste of it, and see if it's something that, you know, if it's a fandom we might even jump ourselves into.
And I have to say, I really did enjoy whenever they cut back to the Mumbai Statler and Waldorf, as I called them.
Yes. Yeah, that's 100%. Yeah. Yeah. And I want to remind everyone that a wicket is not an Ewok reference.
Yeah, exactly.
Good to know.
Although I would love to see Wicket dressed up as a bowler. I think that'd be pretty hilarious. I think that'd be a great cross promotion. So the next time they bring Ewoks into a Disney Plus series, if they're cross marketing this thing overseas, you know, just saying, you know, it'd be kind of fun to see Wicket throwing a wicket.
That'd be amazing. And I did really like the way they threw back to random fans just watching it on their own. I enjoyed that part of it, as opposed to
and in all different ways, either at the stadium, on TV, just even listening to the play by play. I mean, yeah.
Yeah,
the Statler and Waldorf that I mentioned were the two older gentlemen in the barbershop, maybe? Or
yeah.
That's great.
It seemed like they kept throwing out cranky comments on the about the game, so that's why I thought of Statler and Waldorf.
No, that's fair.
Yeah. Yeah, but I think, you know, in closing, I think there's only one thing that we could close with, and that's Mumbai!
Indians!
Nailed it.
Hello, this is Scott. So I'm going to go ahead with my next movie this time that I'm recommending to Dan and Nyan. I believe this is the first movie that I've recommended on the podcast. This is One Night in Miami, which was released on Amazon Prime. It was limited release in theaters in December of 2020, and on Amazon Prime in January of 2021. So this is definitely different from some of the other things that I've pitched before, but I was really intrigued by the premise of this movie. And after watching it, just felt it was really, really well done. So it was directed by Regina King, who, of course, has been in a ton of amazing things as an actress. It was her directorial debut, I believe. And yeah, it's based on a play, actually, by Kemp Powers, who I wasn't really very familiar with, but within 1 year, he was involved in making this movie, which he wrote the screenplay for as well, based on his stage play. And I think he was one of the writers of the movie Soul by from Pixar as well.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So within a very short period of time, he was involved with two really great projects. And this is about a meeting between four pioneers of both the sports world, of entertainment, and of the civil rights movement in the U.S. The four people involved are Malcolm X, Muhammad Ali, Jim Brown, and Sam Cooke, and who were all in Miami for the fight where Muhammad Ali, who was still known by the name Cassius Clay at this point, where he won the heavyweight title for the first time in 1964. So they were all kind of in town for that, and they all knew each other, and they were friends to certain degrees between the four of them. And then after the fight, they all went back to Malcolm X's hotel room and had this like variety of conversations, mostly related to each of their roles in kind of the civil rights movement, or their movement towards what they hoped would be more equality for African Americans in the U.S. But they each had a different approach and different thoughts about how best to accomplish that. And at the time, Malcolm X was having a falling out with some other leaders within the Nation of Islam movement. And he was also trying to recruit, basically, Cassius Clay to join Nations of Islam. And this was the time where Cassius was considering whether or not he wanted to do that. He was not raised a Muslim, but he was considering joining the movement. And they're trying to think about, you know, what kind of massive impact that would have on both the Nation of Islam and as well as the civil rights movement. So while all four of them, as from what I've read about the film, while all four of them were in Miami on this night, they do not know exactly if they all got together and if they talked about all this stuff. So in a sense, it is like it is a fictional story, but kind of imagining what would have happened had these conversations taken place at this point in time, in this very specific time in history and very critical time in terms of the civil rights movement in the U.S. So the majority of this is four people in a room. That's almost the entire movie. The only actor that I recognize is Leslie Odom Jr., of course, from Hamilton fame, who plays Sam Cooke and does sing a little bit in the movie. But it was so, yeah, definitely it's a really different just type of experience watching a movie or a TV show, but really fascinating in my opinion, and just interesting to think about, like, what would it have been like to be in a room with these four people at this time. So that's why I thought I'd try to recommend it for the podcast.
I was gonna ask, so Scott, why do you think both Dan and I would be interested in this movie specifically? Because I get the sense of generally why it's interesting, but why do you think each one of us would appreciate it?
Well, I think you would appreciate a different type of show that I'm recommending, and that you also might be interested in learning about these four people and what they thought about these issues important in American history, and think about who you might agree with or disagree with in terms of what they wanted to do and how they decided to go about doing it.
Okay, so you this is more of a general recommendation as opposed to based on knowing either of us.
Yes, I would say that's true.
But what you're saying is that anyone who would be approaching this movie has something to learn from it, even if it is a loosely based fiction kind of idea.
Yeah, I think so. I think that you might also find it fascinating, as I did, just thinking about these four, you know, very well-known people and what it would have been like to be with all of them and hear them talk about these seminal issues and their involvement in them in the U.S. in the 20th century. Then there was a lot at stake for all of them in their own different ways from this. But yes, it wasn't anything specific to either of you, but I thought it was a really well-done movie.
I mean, so in now I'm thinking about it because, you know, I heard of this movie before. I didn't know much about it at all. Didn't know the historical inner accuracy of it. But I think that it's kind of like the idea that you're a fly on the wall listening to this conversation, if you will.
Yes. Yes, that is the approach, definitely. Puts you in the room with them. Yeah.
I mean, because I have some knowledge. I mean, I did read the biography of Malcolm X. You know, it was a long time ago at this point, but you know, I am tangentially familiar with a number of these different characters in their own right. Some more historically, some less so, just more kind of topically, if you will. So it'll be interesting to see how they picture this. Again, it's not just about, I guess, acting as these people or portraying these people per se. It sounds like to me that there's a theoretical here. It's like, well, writing this, you know, how would these people actually interact with each other? Because, you know, if you had people that are generally more of a peaceful persuasion versus of a more kind of radical persuasion, obviously there's going to be some headbutting, you know, at least on a debate perspective. And so that this kind of thing happens with, when you deal with different levels or extremes of a specific movement as well. So I could definitely see how there's a little bit of an intrigue and suspense and an entente basically that comes out of this. So I could see that why this has potential to be, you know, very intriguing for sure.
Yeah. And I also think it was interesting to think about and for them to give their take on what would have happened, to see these people out of the spotlight. All of them were so very well known and had their own public persona, I think, especially Muhammad Ali, or at least he's the one that I'm most familiar with, who just really seemed like he was performing all the time. But this is seeing them, you know, off stage, away from A, what they were most known for, and B, of what they portrayed or kind of what image that they put forth in public, and to think about, well, what might they have been like when no one was watching? Which I think is really interesting to think about for people that were as famous as they were.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that this is something that a lot of people in the public eye struggle with, and, you know, and especially nowadays, and I have one example of mine that I talked about this past week as of this recording, where we had a person who happens to be the CEO of a specific company and they make certain statements, and all of a sudden, you know, there's this very big shift in basically of perception of that company. And so the idea of the public versus the private body is a thing that a lot of people struggle with. And again, even with, you know, the superheroes we've talked about in this podcast before, there's also that idea too, is that there's this persona that they represent and then who they might actually really be underneath the mask as well. So I think there's a lot of correlation to the human condition that this is talking about or kind of getting into as well. I have not looked at, you know, Rotten Tomatoes, etc., but I would be really curious to know what like the mass or average appeal of this would basically be after having seen it.
Yeah, it was on my list for a while, so I will look, look forward to checking it out.
It was on your radar. Cool.
Yeah. It was one that just kept kind of getting pushed back. My household is a big Regina King household, so it definitely was a priority, but clearly not high enough of one because we just haven't seen it. So yeah, well, we will check it out.
Sounds good.
Awesome. Yeah, I think it's something that might make you think in a little bit of a different way about both some of these people and the movements that they're involved with. So I'll be looking forward to hearing your feedback.
Well, that happened, folks, which brings us to the end of another episode of the Watch OK Please podcast. We hope you had a good time listening to us spout more nonsense today, and hope you join us next week for another exercise in futility. In the meantime, please rate and review us on either Apple Podcasts or Spotify, or just tell a friend about us. Until next week, keep on watching.